This is a production of Cornell University.
Things that are worthwhile, unfortunately, rarely are, but I'm happy to provide whatever insights.
It is time. All right. So welcome everybody to the last EA meeting of the year. All right. And we're very happy to have Kat Tran back with us, who has been diligently submitting the minutes from a transcribed recorder. And now she's here in person. Classes are done. So that's good. Just have to get their exams. So the meeting is now officially called to order. We have a couple folks with us on Zoom, Karen and Carrie. And like to start by asking if there's a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Minutes are approved. Great. So this afternoon, we are fortunate to have our Vice President and Chief Human Resource Officer, Mary Opperman, as well as Reginald White, who is the Strategic Director for HR, joining us. We also have Linda here this afternoon, and who's going to be working with us over the next month on some of the staff discussion items. But today, Mary and Reginald are going to be talking to us about our core value statements. And with that, I would turn it over to Mary.
Great. Thank you so much. And I know what you didn't see is that the meeting before this meeting, they gave me flowers. I was going to bring them and show them, but I didn't. So let me start with just am I clicking from here? So let me start with some introduction of this. So this is a conversation about a set of university values. So you might recall that last fall, the president convened the climate task forces to look at the issues around climate. And the creation of a single university value statement came up as a recommendation from those committees, and the president accepted that. And so if you read any of the materials, you know that she agreed that we would be working on it starting this fall. And so so that's what this is. It's our beginning conversation about the development of a set of university values, and you're actually my first assembly. So I'm going to be visiting with all of the assemblies, collecting information and ideas from all of you, and then we'll talk about how that's going to work. I'll go back over this at the end, but after we get the views and ideas from all of the assemblies, we'll construct a draft, and then our plan is to put that draft up on the website for campus community comments, suggestions, additions, and through the campus information, we'll develop what we hope to be a set of university values. So does anybody have any questions about either what we're doing or how we're doing it? Yeah.
Is there already a previous draft or previous version that exists, or is it something new?
So that's a really good point. There are snippets of what I would call values that sit at different places, but the university does not have a set of core values that has endured. There were about 15 or so values in the 2010 to 2015 strategic plan. But those were developed by that faculty committee. They weren't developed this way, the input of the staff, the faculty, and the students. So our goal is really to create an enduring set of values, and then hopefully they'll live on for a while. Did somebody else have a question? So we'll get started, but feel free to interrupt me as we go. Okay. I don't know where. There you go. So this is a really dense slide, and I apologize for that, but it helps us understand what core values are and what they are not. So at the risk of doing what I tell people never to do, I'm going to read the slide because it's really hard to read. Core values of an organization are those values we hold, which form the foundation on which we perform work and conduct ourselves. We have an entire universe of values, but some of them are so primary, so important to us, that throughout the changes in society, government, politics, and technology, they are still the core values we will abide by. And then it goes on for a bit, which you can read. It gives you what core values are and what they are not. So core values govern personal relationships, guide business processes, clarify who we are and what we stand for, help explain why we do this the way we do. I'm sorry for the business and stuff, but this is taken from a website. Guide us on how to teach, inform us how to reward, guide us in making decisions, underpin the whole organization, require no external justification, and are for us essential tenets. They are not operating practices, business strategies, cultural norms, competencies, changed in response to market and administration. So they shouldn't fluctuate when things around us are fluctuating or used individually. So that's just a primer about what core values are. So I thought what might be helpful before we got talking was to show you some value statements. And this isn't, I'm not saying these are good or we should take them or anything. They're just a series of value statements for you to take a look at. This is from the University of Texas at Austin. Theirs are fairly simple. Learning, discovery, freedom, leadership, individual opportunity, and responsibility. And in each, they have a very short description of what they mean by that word. This is Harvard's. Respect for the rights, differences, and dignity of others. Honesty, integrity in all dealings. Conscientious, pursuit of excellence in one's work, and accountability for actions and conduct in the workplace. This is Starbucks. Creating a warmth and belonging where everyone is welcome, acting with courage, challenging the status quo, and finding new ways to grow our company and each other. Being present, connecting with transparency, dignity, and respect, delivering our very best in all we do, holding ourselves accountable for results, and being performance-driven through the lens of community. And this is Southwest. This is like one of the longest ones I've found. But I think that you can get a sense of this. They have a warrior. So if you've ever, by the way, if you've ever traveled Southwest, at least for me, these felt very genuine to the way that how these result in actions by their employees. Have a warrior spirit, strive to be the best, display a sense of urgency, and never give up. Have a servant's heart, follow the golden rule, treat others with respect, and embrace our Southwest family. Fun loving attitude. Be a passionate team player, don't take yourself too seriously, and celebrate successes. Work safely, follow the standard operating procedures, identify and report hazards, respect and comply with regulations. Wow our customers, deliver world-class hospitality, create memorable connections, be famous for friendly service, and keep costs low. So that's from Starbucks. So you can see that they are different based on the industry that we're talking about. So those of in universities, because these are to raise everyone, are about what is expected of the whole community that is together at a residential university. So I don't know how to go back, but I have already talked with you about this. These are the next steps. We'll have these discussions with all the assemblies, EAs first, and then we'll create a draft based on those conversations that are informed by those conversations. We'll put that draft on the website so that the whole campus community can see them and comment on them, and then we'll refine and finalize. Anybody have any questions? Yeah.
What is the time frame? When is your expected deliverable?
Well, I've already not met the time frame. So the original goal was to have this first step done by the end of the year, but because of the schedules of the assemblies, I think our goal is to be done next semester. So does anybody have any?
Once we have a set of core values, how does that become implemented or integrated into the core of who we are?
Yeah, that's a great question. So how do you take your core value statement and make it actionable? So we've talked about things like making sure everyone new to the campus gets them, and then how we infuse them into the decision processes that we use. But it's a slow process to take. The starting is to figure out what it is, because until you know what the values are, it's hard to know exactly how to operationalize them. But at a minimum, once we all as a community have them, we want to make sure that everybody new to the community has them as well. Okay? So with that as a backdrop, Reginald and I are going to listen, and Reginald, because he's by his computer and I'm not by mine, will take notes on your comments. So is there anything you want me to go back to, which I don't know, actually have to do? Oh, right. Yes, you did say that. Yeah. If there's one of these or others that you want to look at first, what I'd ask you to do is think about, when you think about the values of Cornell, whether what they are or what you believe, you dream they should be, what word or short phrase comes to mind? Folks, hardest to do first.
I would say inclusiveness. Everyone, regardless of in a university setting, to be free to express what they feel and feel like they're part of the community, regardless of what they say.
So I'm gonna suggest maybe that's two really important things. It's inclusiveness, and it's an openness or freedom to speak regardless of point of view. So I sometimes it sounds jargon, but sort of freedom of expression. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah.
Excellence.
Great.
Unsinkable.
I like that one. What else?
Flexible.
Great. Yeah. Okay.
Education, opportunity.
Educational opportunities.
Inclusion, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Terrific.
Adaptable.
Maybe with adaptable resilience. Yeah, terrific.
Respect.
Transparent.
I think about the motto a lot, and the any person thing always sticks with me the most out of everything that Cornell should be proud of.
So somehow using the motto in our value statement. Yeah, terrific. Great. Thank you. Yeah. Perfect. Well, that's because I just went, yeah. That wasn't very
so if we just go with standard statements, the knowledge with a public purpose, I think that to look at what our purpose is.
So knowledge with a public purpose. Did I get it? Okay, great.
Yeah. I was just kind of off what Chris said. I think there's a notion in the Any Person, Any Study about accessibility that we have an inclusive, I think is what Herb said, but inclusive and accessible or something.
Yep. Accessible, inclusive and accessible. Good.
Collaborative, because we're so strong in so many things and people do seem to cross boundaries and fields and work together.
Yep, exactly. And that increasing, right? Yeah. So Reginald, can you read those back?
Yes, I can. All right, so inclusiveness, openness or freedom of expression, excellence, unsinkable, flexible, educational opportunity, adaptable, resilient, respect, transparent, using the motto in our statement, the motto of Any Person, Any Study, knowledge with a public purpose, accessible, collaborative.
Problem solving.
Imagine. creativity and imaginativeness in our problem solving, or are those two separate things?
Not just doing what you're supposed to do,
but being able to say, hey, what about?
Great. So do you feel like problem solving captures that? I want to make sure we get the rest of that comment. So sort of going, you know, going beyond what you're required to do to solve the problem. Is that a fair way to say?
Yep. Or thoughtful process.
Thoughtful process?
Yeah.
Great.
The one thing I'm thinking is like groundbreaking, or we don't want to have leadership as a core value, but the component that we are leaders in many realms and how we facilitate that. So groundbreaking, innovative, that type of.
So let's put them together. Groundbreaking, innovative, thought leader. Did you say those? Let's put those all on one so that we capture the, the essence of what you're trying to say.
Kirk and I came from a research program with computer graphics. What could you say to capture them?
What was created, innovative, groundbreaking, all those things, very supportive of new ideas.
So supportive of new ideas sort of goes with what you were saying about, you know, kind of doing what we need to do to solve the problem. Maybe it's also kind of encouraging creativity. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, part of what we did with not only the students, the staff, and everyone was really push the boundaries of what they were thinking was capable.
Yeah, push the boundaries. I like that. Push the boundaries of what we thought was possible. Nice. Okay. Others.
I don't know how to make it fit, and maybe anybody can help me, but like pride is something that's standing out in my mind. Like we all, the students work really hard to get here. The professors have to be outstanding in their area to be professors here. We all worked really hard to get our job and probably went through lots of interviews. And it's one of those places where it's cool to wear the shirt. It's cool to wear the shirt of the place that you belong to as a person and walk around. And that doesn't happen a lot. And I don't want it to seem like disingenuous of like, oh, we're so, you know, special in that kind of way. But I think it is a special thing that's different than most places of like, I am happy to be here every day because this is such a cool place.
Yeah, I love it. Pride. That's great.
Yeah. I think we should also touch base that we're not just Ithaca. We have New York. We have different locations. We have Qatar. We're so global.
Yeah, that's great. So the sort of full definition of Cornell.
No boundaries, as it were. We can be anywhere and everywhere, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, not scary anywhere and everywhere. But.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point that, you know, that Cornell is more than just the, any one campus. It's the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, right?
Exactly.
Because that, I think we would hope this would come up no matter which campus we were.
That's exactly right. So.
Would like to add the word
conscientious.
Mind
if I stop sharing? It's Jeremy Cruiser.
Write it down just because it came from like the air. Jeremy, did you want to say any more?
I don't want to take EA time, but I couldn't help myself.
You're comfortable if we just capture the word conscientious?
I think that particularly having experience with the EA, one of the things that has truly impressed me with our folks is their conscientiousness, their awareness of their own conscience and conscience and doing what's right by it.
Great. Sort of a guiding principles or set of, is that what you mean by conscientious?
It's a sense of duty. The things that we do because we follow our conscience.
Got it. Great. Sorry.
So I wanted to mention the fact, like, what are we trying to model after? Like, I saw some corporations, universities. So how about being kind? Like, we're so great, but maybe we're not that, we can be kinder. you know?
Kind, yeah.
So, like, to have that kind of sense that this is not a money-making machine.
Right.
Because we should not be.
Right.
You know? We're not Starbucks, or we're not, we should not be for profit.
Although both Starbucks and Southwest, you know, which are very for profit, both had a version of kind.
Right, so yeah, we need to kind of direct our consciousness into being kind, although we're like being humble. Like, there are things only great people can accomplish, kindness and humbleness, you know. They
don't, that's
great. Not a lot of people think about that. So, and like having this, you know, if you wanna build the full human being, you need to think about the like well-roundedness, you know. We just can't have science without humanities, you know. So we need to have this on our radar as a core value. Maybe we're not there yet 100%, but being kind in with changing governments and policies, you know, is very essential. And that's what makes us human. You know, so, otherwise we're machines, I think.
Exactly. So let me make sure, because we want to capture it the way, so is it possible that we have kind and humble, and then you made a comment about the kind of the a comprehensive education?
Right, like a moral, it's just not math and science. There needs to be morality in education, which is, I mean, this aligns with some Jesuit traditions, like let's say as far as schools, you know. So if you don't want to be like, you know, where do you want to lie on the scale? Do you want to be super secular, or you want to be a mixture of both, you know, although it's freedom of religion or no religion, you know, whatever it is, just to have that freedom.
Right.
You know, so to entertain these conversations.
Right, exactly. I think the goal of developing a value statement together is that we're trying to hear the genuine reactions of people about what either our current values are or what we believe that they should be. And when we put that all together, hopefully that will reflect our values for the whole campus. So we're not really trying to copy the ones
right.
that we saw. Those are just a way to think about how they frame their values. We may use something in theirs, we may use nothing. They're just really intended to show you the different ways universities and companies have approached their values.
Because one other thought comes to mind, if we have like greatness, let's say in our core values, well, I can't tell myself that I'm great. Other people tell me that stuff. So, you know, like,
well,
you know,
that's good that that's how you identify greatness. Some
like,
people,
let's say,
yeah, some people self-identify it, and that's okay too. But
right.
so help me understand where you're going with this.
So, I mean, these things we can demonstrate through action. Rather than like, yes, we're headed that way, but these are our actions that will define who we are, rather than just like writing it down.
Our
yes.
actions.
Yes.
Right. Great.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure we get that we don't, in other words, we don't want just words on paper.
Right.
Right. We want our actions to be consistent.
Right. Right. And be empowering too. Like, let's empower whoever, you know, we're headed in that direction. Like, maybe more, we need to empower more people. You know, let's think about that too.
So an empowered campus.
Yes.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
What else?
I think yeah. outreach, which encompasses the idea of giving back, extension, engagement.
Yeah, public service outreach.
Right.
Yep. Terrific. Engagement. Great. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I think that there are many positive goal-oriented attributes that we could come up with, but are they core values? How do we define what's a core value and what's something we want to move towards in terms of goal? Or, and we could have 50 or we could have 5. But, you know, I just like, I want to hone in on what exactly the word core means. And how we drill down to that, up to that level.
Right. So great question. So core values are not 50.
Right.
So if you look, there's anywhere between 4 to about 8 core values. And that's to your point, because they are really core, they're unchanging, and they drive to the essence of the organization. Yep.
Right, so I would think that in order to sort of capture what would be described as a core value, you would want something that sort of encompasses many other of the attributes we're trying to achieve. So all of these things that have been listed, you know, by all of us might be able to be filtered into one bucket of respect or humility or kindness, or and they can all fit in to those kinds of
things. So you know, we have six shared governance groups. We'll take all of these, and there should be common themes that emerge from these, and that will help us form that first draft, and then the community will help us refine it. So the goal is really to get out these ideas and then see how they align as we talk to everyone. And then see again, when we put it on the campus website, how the reactions from there. So it's a building process, but it's essential, I think, to get as many of these ideas out as possible, because that's how you figure out where your theme areas are. Yep, thank you. Others? Yeah.
Since we're just throwing them out there, I think one of the words that we probably need to include there is nurturing. And I think that encompasses, you know, because it's, what is it, promoting growth, I guess, is kind of like the word for it. So on the educational side, plus on the employee side, you know, one of the things the university does is likes to, you know, get employees, you know, to move up and stuff like that. And I think that's one of the things where we have education for employees and stuff. So I think nurturing needs to be thrown in there as a kind of a blanket.
Terrific.
Friendly.
Or friendlies. The best friend.
I would like to see us strive towards an equality or equal treatment of hierarchical organizations, to sort of somehow get at the sense that we're all humans and that there should be some, I don't know, maybe that fits in respect.
So equity of treatment? Okay, let me write that down.
Yeah, it goes in with compassion, or with kindness, but compassionate.
Kindness, yes.
Yeah.
Compassion.
So, yep. Compassion.
Yep.
Kindness.
Yeah. Accountable. Yep, that's great. Do you want to say any more?
No, I'm just thinking like, or also like stewardship, but I don't know if that's exactly right what I want to do, but just that, like, what we produce and how we act and how we react, that to be accountable for our actions.
Yes, I like it very much. Yes. And that is a great definition, actually, of stewardship, accountable for our actions. Yep.
Yeah, I know I'm not EA, but I was for 6 years. So.
Don't look at me, ask him.
The floor is yours.
So one of the things since I've been here that I think is one of the greatest values, that's just a lived value of Cornell, is the sense of community and how much we take care of each other. And in all the different places that I've worked, I've seen it come through. And I think it's one of the things that makes Cornell really special as a value that I think almost everybody holds.
So is it too jargony to say caring community?
It captures it. I know that there, when you had listed, like Southwest Airlines had that one thing about that we, something like we take care of our Southwest community or because I think that that's kind of the essence of something that is really special about Cornell. And I think a lot of people have that value system and value that.
So what if we said community hyphen caring for one another? Would that get it?
Yes. Yes.
Say again?
Like community mindfulness.
Community mindfulness. Does that get at it?
Yeah, that would get it. I heard once somebody said, we don't let each other fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's that. We take care of each other and help each other and lift each other.
Great.
Yep.
So let's write both of those down.
Yep.
Great. Others.
Yeah.
I don't need to. If you feel like, do you? I wish we had them up, but
it was the Southwest family.
I should have thought of that. I'm going to show you what you've already said. Reginald, do you want to read them again? I'm sorry.
We can put them up there.
Yeah, we can put them up if you. Why don't we just email it to us?
I'll read them. Inclusiveness, everyone should be able to express themselves, openness or freedom of expression, excellence, unsinkable, flexibility, educational opportunity, adaptable, resilient, respect, transparent, using the motto of any person, any study in our statement, knowledge with a public purpose, accessible, collaborative, problem solving that is going beyond what is expected, thoughtful process, open to new ideas, creativity, groundbreaking, innovative thought leaders, push the boundaries of what we thought was possible, pride because of who we are and how difficult it was to get in. different locations, no boundaries, we're more than just Ithaca, New York, Qatar, et cetera. Conscientious, aware of conscience and doing what's right, a sense of duty to follow our conscience, being kind, humble, well-roundedness, not science without humanity, a comprehensive education with morality, our actions are consistent with the value with our values, an empowered campus community, outreach, public service engagement, nurturing, promoting growth, friendly, equity, equal or equity of treatment, the acknowledgement that we're all humans, compassion, accountable for our actions or stewardship, sense of community, our desire to take care of each other, community mindedness or community caring, that we don't let each other fail.
Anything we missed that you want to make sure is on the list?
Excellence?
Excellence is there.
That's so the improvement for the assembly is we'll figure out how to show them. I'm sorry about that.
Maybe you want to reword the community to a sense of global citizenship.
Global citizenship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, we had students from all over the world.
That's a great one. Mm-hmm. Let's keep them both because I don't want to change anything that somebody said. But let's add that one. Absolutely.
Was sustainability?
Yeah. Sustainability. No, it was not on there.
No.
Yeah. But it is now.
Diversity.
Diversity.
I would say in personnel, people as well as of thought, possibly multi-generational. Like we've got like people who've been here for a long time, really young people, excellent student leadership, and we kind of all get together and respect each other. And that I know when Gordon presented that is the transition of the millennials, now the big workforce, and they want to work differently. I think that's important, like a multi-generational family.
Great.
Terrific.
Okay. If you think of something else afterwards, and don't worry if you can't remember if it was there. If it's something else you want, a word. Remember, these are words or phrases. And then, if you're not sure I'll know what you mean by the word or phrase, explain it. My email, if you don't know, is mgo5, and you can write to me and we'll make sure it gets on the EA list. And so we'll be visiting with all the other assemblies, as I said, and from all of that, we will put it all together to create themes. Those will obviously be shared with, with the president and others, and from there, hopefully honed down into a set of key values, and they'll be in draft form after based on the feedback that we've gotten from both the assemblies and also the president and the leaders. We'll get it all together and we'll get up a draft, and from that, and then in that draft our goal is really to get public comment from everyone, and hopefully after that we will we'll settle in on, for them to be used over the years, you can't have a long list. and nor, by the way, can you have a word or a phrase and then two paragraphs of explanation about what you mean. So these have to really be, they'll encompass a lot. So it's that's the goal. So thank you. You're my first conversation, and I have to be honest, I was happy it was the EA. Any last comments before I leave you to the rest of your business? Hey, hey.
What do you think are some core values? What are things that you think are important to us that maybe we've missed or you want to highlight?
I actually think that was a very good list. I really do think that it starts with a commitment to excellence. And I do think creating a compassionate organization, but that shouldn't surprise you given me. What I do for a living. But I think those are really key. Working with integrity, I think it's very important that people act with integrity at all times. Those are some of mine, if I get a vote. Great, thank you all very much.
Thank you very much,
I just realized
Mary.
That when I move up and down, I'm on that thing. Over here now.
Thank you. As well as my
yep.
Thank you. Appreciate you all being here with us this afternoon. At this point, we have not had an opportunity to have reports the last couple of meetings, so I'd like to begin with that and start with the Communications and Awards Committee. Carrie, can you hear us?
I don't think she's on.
She is on. I'll unmute her. Carrie, you're unmuted.
So Education Committee, Arla sent an email. She has no new updates. She's waiting for the EDP Office for Stats, and no other initiatives are being pursued right now.
Okay, Carrie, are you up?
I just sent her a message.
Okay, we go to Andrea with the Welfare Committee.
Yes, the Employee Welfare Committee has met once, and we meet again on Monday, the 10th in the morning. The location was finalized this morning. Just before this meeting, thank you, Kate. Supran has the minutes from our prior meeting, so I'll get those out to everybody. Our next meeting is key to really guide us through the review, and I've spent a lot of time delving into all of the notes from the staff conversations because our time frame is to have that all to and some semblance of order by the beginning of January. And so thankfully we've invited Linda Crowell Howell, Ruth Katz to that meeting on Monday the 10th to help sort of understand. Hey, talked about sort of folks that are interested and asked for anyone who'd be willing to work on the assemblance of that. I think it's what we're going to do is go to the Employee Welfare Committee and see if there's folks within that committee that are interested in helping. And obviously, we don't want 27 people on that committee right. Trying to delve into all of that data. But at the same time, I think if it is sort of anchored or beginning with the Employee Welfare Committee, I'd like to ask the folks on that committee to really start off and go from there. But that said, if anyone else has a strong interest in doing that. And then the other thing that Kate Hey and I met this last week with Chantal Clary, who is our
Title IX
coordinator for the university, to talk about how the EA and the Employee Welfare Committee could collaborate. And as you can see on our agenda, she's coming on February 6th to our EA meeting to talk about. She's just incredibly dynamic. I'm really excited for you all to meet her if you haven't, and talk about her vision for the Title IX perspective. And I think and the sort of the precipitous of that discussion was really talking about how the Employee Welfare Committee could and the EA can support initiatives that are happening in the Title IX realm on campus, and if there is a role, if there is an opportunity for collaboration, and where we go from here. Great. So that was a great meeting that we had last week, and then we look forward. But I think the business of the committee is really going to be working on, I think that I feel like it's a dumpster dive into all of that data that we have to be able to do. So thank you to all those of you who are doing notes and putting them up. It's not as if anybody's not looking at them yet. We're just trying to figure out how we're going to put that into some semblance of a document.
All right. Great. Thank you, Andrea. Transportation Committee.
In our first meeting, Bridget and Reed gave us a kind of a preview of the optimization study. And they'll be joining us in February. We have a meeting next week, maybe the 17th, maybe that's 2 weeks, where we'll be reviewing the poll information that we had from last term and seeing if there's any remaining themes or issues that are not currently on the radar with transportation that we could discuss with them.
Thank you very much, Christine. Benefits and Policy Committee, Tarek.
Yes, so we still have one meeting to go this year. We had so far three meetings. So far, so good. Last meeting, we had Lauren Jacoby join us to the discussion. So basically, we established some sort of working on how things, what things to address, how can we communicate, how can we, you know, get feedback, ask questions. So that's a that's a good start. So she communicated to, she would like to communicate to the EA some changes about vacation policy. I'm sure most of you have heard about this. If not, I'll just tell you more about it. So there are a couple of changes to some provisions in the vacation policy with regards to when somebody starts at Cornell, there is a limit, like waiting period. You can't use vacation within the first 6 months,
right,
or you have to pay back vacation if you quit within a year. So these are two provisions that are being removed,
right,
or going. Yeah, so I don't know when is the exact date, but this is coming down the pipe. So the rule is going to be if it's accrued, you can use it, you know,
right,
regardless. This your six before
yeah,
6 months or a year. So also she expressed some more changes down the line about half health and personal leave. You know, I've been in contact with them with the study I've done about vacation pay time off policy, and they kind of gave me some answers. So at this point they need more information from EA, so I would like to be on the agenda to kind of bring you in on that and
okay,
see, you know, they need recommendations. So that's that part. Okay. The other part, I met last week, kind of this is news to my committee. I met with Gordon Birch, I always forget his name, to start bringing benefits in because that kind of piece was not that existent. You know? And so he already has two suggestions, maybe the EA would need to work on a benefit survey because I don't believe there has been like an articulated benefits. So most of the time it has been like a checkbox.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you satisfied with benefits? Yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't dig deeper on what benefits. So
right,
I asked him why don't you guys do it? He said the assembly to,
yeah,
you know, so that's one area we could work on. The other thing is like ideas how to communicate. It's not about like lack of communication because there are 17 ways to communicate to people about benefits, but people still seem not to read the emails or like get the notification. So that's always a challenge there. And lastly, so Peggy brought up the issue about the more education for retirees,
mm-hmm,
that are non-union. So we're addressing that, like starting to address that with kind of data. So we identified a couple of experts with
work life. Yeah,
work life.
That's my team.
Michelle Arteby will be working with her And I forgot the other name, so, but that's it. Let's keep it short. That's my updates.
Thank you very much. I would like to excuse myself. I have to go to another meeting, but I want to wish you all a wonderful holiday season with your family and friends. And thank you so much for the work that you've done to this point. I think we're off to a great start. Looking forward to our mid-year retreat. And so, wonderful holidays. Take care.
So executive committee, no new updates on our end. We're working through some things and some ideas, but nothing new to our report now.
Nothing new to report. And then do we have Carrie now communications up?
No. I sent her a message. She must have had it today, but it says she's still on.
Chris, I hate to
I kind of missed our past two meetings.
You have met, okay. Never mind. So we'll hold off and see if Carrie has something
and,
else.
And there's another meeting next week. Is it next week or the following week? I don't know. It's a couple of days.
I think it's next Wednesday. I'm sure.
Yeah, Wednesday at lunchtime. So.
Yes, it is Wednesday the 12th.
Yep.
We did have the George Peter Award for
Thank you, Nancy.
That went very well. She and her family, well, some of the family members were there. She has 75 children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren.
Wow.
You can imagine what Thanksgiving is like. But it went very well, and it's up in the Chronicle now, and it'll be in public.
Thank you, Nancy.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat who was awarded?
The George Peter Award for Dedicated Service. It's been in existence for many years, was named for him back in the early 2000s, I think.
Who was awarded the award this year?
The award was given to Agnes Morse from EH&S. And all of her supervisors, former and current, the former ones that had gone elsewhere, all zoomed in, and so they were able to say something and talk to her.
We wrapped it.
And the interesting thing I found out in the background, normally the George Peter Award is given to the employee, and it's a surprise to that employee. In EH&S, they made it a surprise to the entire department. They have the entire department meet elsewhere for a so-called mandatory staff meeting. So that was pretty cool.
Because they couldn't keep their mouths quiet if they wanted to.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, we had people from Saudi Arabia, Clemson, South Dakota, Arizona, Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So new business. I want to give some time to Marcy to talk about how mid-year retreat planning is going. So I think she has an update for us.
Yep. So we had a doodle poll. Thanks everyone for responding. 17 people responded, with 16 saying that January 9th would work for them. So we're going to have the retreat in Geneva on January 9th. We're arranging two vans to go. We're asking for two volunteers to drive the vans, preferably someone who is registered as a fleet driver.
Any volunteers?
A volunteer.
I'll have to get back to you on that, but I just got my CDL for driving a bus.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think I would handle it.
Do you have a bus?
I would caution you.
I was going to say, maybe, do you have the bus as well?
I don't know if I could do that.
So I'm not registered, but I think
if you check with the van place, if it's a Cornell van, you do need some familiarity with those vans.
Yeah, if it's the 12-seater.
You can't just hop in them and drive.
You have to pay the it's like a $25 online plus test drive.
Right. Yeah. It's the fleet garage that you would have to go through.
So I'll check with them and see if I'm good.
I just have to, because I won't come to Ithaca. I live in Cortland, so I wouldn't come to Ithaca then to turn around and go to.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why we're going to Geneva? It just, it seems
We have the open Geneva spot. So we have an open EA spot for Geneva, as well as the fact that we have had a historical precedence in making sure that we connect with them physically, and we have not been up for a few years.
And I completely agree that it would be great to connect. I just wonder if January in Geneva is a perfect time. That's, on an inclement weather basis. I just wondered. I had to ask a question because I was like, why are we going now?
We were going to pair it up with our mid-year retreats. Our mid-year retreat would be done now, unfortunately, in winter.
All right.
So if there were, did we do a sort of backup date if there was inclement weather? Or backup plan, we might need to address that. Thank you, Andrea, about inclement weather and sort of.
Because you just never know.
Correct. Oh yeah, with Geneva, and it is. So that's good. Thanks, and maybe we can we'll discuss that and go.
Would you have a backup date in spring?
Well, no, because we wouldn't do. We'll. Thank you.
Just
we'll,
on campus backup. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was.
On campus, if inclement weather, if I'm being,
right.
I'm not coming, so I
right.
can zoom in if you want me to. But,
yeah.
Right.
So, but think about that for people driving an hour, right?
So we'll do. We'll bring that up in the exact. We're still meeting. We'll reach out email wise.
Geneva's 20 minutes for you.
And we know that obviously people need things on their calendar as soon. For now, we can at least work on the fact of block your January 9th.
Yes.
And then we will, and you know, Gina and the Office of Assembly will get things to your calendar once we finalize. But we do obviously want to proceed with a mid-year retreat for us to go through what we need to get done. But thanks, Andrew. We'll
I think those were very good points. So
we'll
discuss them.
And we're still working on the agenda. And meals and stuff. But we're getting there.
So this is when we'll actually meet next for the first time?
Before the next actual EA meeting, that is correct.
Our next EA meeting isn't until January 16th, so this will be a week before that.
January what?
16th. Is that it for the mid-year retreat update? Okay, with new business, we also have Resolution 3, which you probably received a copy of earlier today, so I'll put this over to Pawan to discuss it further.
So if you didn't have a chance, go ahead and pick up the physical hard copy that the OA printed out for us, as well. If not, you can log on to our box and see it electronically. It is regarding the academic title holders that hopefully you are aware of, and moving through and giving support to the Faculty Senate as we proceed with having them be released from the EA over to the Faculty Senate. I want to step off with sort of connect it, as we just saw with the core values that we were talking about. I want you to think of these 1,000 individuals that will be granted voting rights, just over 1,000, granting them that transparency, granting them those values we just discussed. At the moment, they really don't have that real sort of sense of community. And I think when we go through, we look at the resolution now that you can pull up, as well as the appendix that gives you the meat of what the committee has done. Think of those core values and bringing in those over 1,000 individuals into a very clear, communicative, transparent setting where they will have a voice. So if you look at the resolution, it's nice and clean. It is, the main idea is to formally endorse the with by the EA and declared support with the formal recommendations from the committee on academic title holder representations and shared governance at the university. I'll skip down to line 10. It identifies how many we really are talking about, the comparison with the 1,600 tenure track and tenure. So those we're gonna shift, call them TTs. Along then with those that we're talking about, the academic title holders being 460 research faculty, 380 teaching faculty, 230 extension faculty, and along then that 600 plus emeriti. The remaining academic positions, we're going to give them a sense of not being negatively toned, like non-tenure track, We're going to have them be research, teaching, and extension title holders. They're just over 1,000, so it's 1,060. That will include visitors, adjuncts, courtesy, postdocs. The 520 plus the 500 are included under that umbrella, but they will not be given voting seats. The visitors, adjuncts, courtesy, and postdocs. Okay, they're included under the scope, but not voting. The university faculty will shift over to TT. Again, the RTE individuals are currently under us, Employee Assembly. And we'd like to align them over to the faculty. So line 17, whereas the research faculty is defined as a group of research professors, senior scientists, so on, and it gives you all the titles that we're looking at. The only different sort of odd thing you might find, and which is explained through the appendix, is we are also discussing librarians, archivists, again, the visiting critics, and so on, under research scope. A lot of discussion, a lot of meat in the appendix as far as why they are under research, and the main idea being, as they are doing a lot of backup support, research publications, and less in the classroom teaching scope. That's why those archivists and librarians were plugged in there. Then line 22, where the teaching faculty is defined as a group of all professors of the practice, clinical professors, senior lecturers, lecturers, and it goes on with that, is again, we are focusing with that group in the classroom, whether that is classroom at a law practice, classroom in the clinics at the vet school end or in Gannett. It is the teaching aspect of didactic and full-on class. Line 22, whereas the extension faculty is defined as a group of all senior extension associates and extension associates. Again, our outreach, our land grant, we did feel that their scope and position was very different to the research, very different to just the teaching, and we left them out, so that would make our RTE. 28, whereas the group of all research, teaching, extension faculty is referred to as RTE faculty. Nice and clean, no negative connotation, you know, bring them in to the table there. Number 31, whereas the RTE faculty have concerns, interests aligned deeply with the concerns and interests of the university faculty, such as a clear promotion, renewal standards, professional development, recruitment, retention, all of these as we go through, and various academic RTE issues. That was page number 37. Whereas postdocs have a critical role to play within the research community, 39, be it therefore resolved that it is in the best interest of Cornell to have both RTE faculty and the postdoc community represented through the Faculty Senate rather than through the Employee Assembly. 43, be it further resolved that all Cornell policies use the term RTE faculty instead of non-tenure track faculty. I then add and include the appendix, which is the clear committee recommendations related to the faculty setting the elections. We have academic title holders. It shows you the work that has been going on, being led by Charlie Van Loan and the committee that I am part of. Questions?
So what's the benefit from that?
Think of them. And again, I work in a lot of immigration law policy, and I know it might not be positive, but think of them as the undocumented of the campus community. All of us here, whether even if we look at our union, all of us that are banded employees have very clear pathways to discuss things with human resources, labor laws, policies, promotional reviews. We have very a very clear sense of how we can engage with the community as far as our positions, our promotion.
So
this group of individuals, right, the 1,006, do not fall under how a regular human resource representative will take them, and they do not have the guaranteed clear support as a tenure track or a tenure track position as far as academic handbook, the academic handbook policy.
Right. So does so they're going to fall under Faculty Senate.
Yep.
And does Charlie Van Loan give, you know, because you said that you talk a lot. Do they or do they not have any voting rights whatsoever?
And that's, again, the lack of consistency and clarity. Some colleges do allow for some level of voting within some of these titles. It is not consistent, it is not clear, and if they step outside of that small circle, they don't have it. And as a whole, they are normally referred to as non-tenured or non-tenured track faculty or just even academics.
Because we could put them here as a representative.
And that's what we did try, and there was clear engagement that they did not want to be here. That their request for academic integrity, the way that they work aligns with and mirrors that of those tenure track or tenured positions.
Because I just have a concern that there's in the Faculty Senate, there's still going to be a line drawn that we are faculty, you are not.
And that's what the appendix, if you go through, I know it's a lot of meat, that appendix and the work that has been done is to erase that line.
So that's being taken care of,
yep.
Or has been?
Yep.
Okay.
Andrea?
Prior to my current position, I was a senior extension associate, now I'm tenure track faculty in ILR. And you described it perfectly. You're sort of in between two worlds.
Yeah.
I had a faculty appointed maternity policy, which was fabulous, but at the same time I had to work a lot while I was home on maternity leave.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah. It's just a little bit different in trying to be able to do it. So this consistency, and never in a million years thought that I was covered by EA.
And that was the main reason. That is what triggers it.
Right.
You see your hand, Matt?
I have two things. One, as a student here, I can tell you I've interacted with lecturers or whether they're a lecturer or a clinical professor, I can tell you from a student point of view, they're indistinguishable from your tenure track
exactly
faculty.
Right.
They teach normally. I was an undergrad in ILR. I'm now a dual JD MBA. Law and Johnson lean very heavily on the clinical faculty just because of their, but I can tell you in a law school, the clinical faculty are treated the same as normal faculty just because law as a practice, you practice the law as it is different and just because you have to practice it. But also I can say that difference, I mean, I've seen lecturers serve in essence, you ask them, am I faculty or am I employee? Without question, they see themselves as faculty.
Yeah.
The law school lets them vote as faculty. I mean, just they are teaching, they see themselves doing research. I think that's great. And I've been talking about this for years. So
yeah.
I'm very glad coming forward. I guess the one question I had is regarding postdocs and what level of engagement has this committee done with them? I mean, I see that they're mentioned in sparingly. I think, personally, for the RTE, they belong under the Faculty Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this for many years, and I agree, especially from the student side.
Yeah.
For the postdocs, I know there's been a lot of discussion about maybe they should be under the Graduate Professional Student Assembly.
Yep.
I was actually been messaging back and forth with the executive team of that assembly.
Yeah.
And just, it seems like this is putting them under the Faculty Senate with a single ex officio seat.
Right.
And that just seems, I'm curious what thought went into that, and also how much engagement. Because I know the GPSA said we haven't heard about it. We knew this was going on, but haven't heard about it for a few months.
Yeah.
And think that they definitely have stances there between faculty and graduate students, especially if you've just got your PhD.
Yeah.
So how you envision that fitting in? Because I know the GPSA is interested in that as well.
So there was a call out and some input requested by postdoctoral associates. The general consensus was a less of an interest in participating at this level of shared governance due to the transient nature of the majority of those appointments. 3 years, maybe 2-3 years postdoc, you're maybe doing 1 or 2, and you're really looking at a different sort of position at that point. The idea as well, and again, I know the appendix is pretty scary. The idea is that moving with getting them into the Faculty Senate and bringing them all in, there would be either the establishment of standing committee that would address specifically only these title holders, as well as if not, then taking one of the current Faculty Senate committees and detailing out the clear responsibilities and actionable items for these title holders. Again, the aim and what is here for us as EA members is they officially in shared governance are ours. All these individuals we are talking about, they are in theory ours, the EA. I'm asking you to release them, make them that responsibility of the Faculty Senate, where they then have to take up action items and bring them up. Out of all the engagement we've done, the research, the websites, the open sessions, there are some horrid stories from these individuals, and they are sitting at they're mentoring PhD students, they're writing the grants, they're doing pretty much the same positions as our TT. faculty, and they need somewhere to be plugged in. So I know you have Laura a question. Oh no, sorry, Anne.
Yes, so I, you know, to me it makes a lot of sense. What does the faculty say that
they? They are engaged, they've been willing to speak to us. It's been very aggressive, the amount of work we've done through the committee itself, as well as the presentations and dialogue with the Faculty Senate. It has been positive. There has been meetings directly with each dean as well. We wouldn't be this far if we didn't see that this is moving forward. Laura.
So I have a question as the library and museum rep. I noticed you had a librarian on the committee. I'm just curious because I hadn't heard about this before. What are the librarians thinking? Because unlike a lot of the other positions you're describing, in general, librarians may hold classes for people and how to use library resources,
yep.
but they are not generally considered part of the professoriate.
So we have a librarian on board at the committee level. The library as well is very unique that it has its own odd independent shared governance branch as well that we didn't want to touch. And the interest have been because of the focus that even though, and again, none of these are clear cut. A lot of these RTD-ish individuals are doing, even while they're under a research title, are still doing responsibilities, are still doing some extension. We're trying to look at, let's say, you know, a broader picture of their role is going to fall under that. The librarians understand that, and they themselves, with the feedback and the engagement, felt that they falling under their R aspect would be good. And again, the numbers, if you look at the appendix, the numbers of librarians are pretty small, considering, and we are allocating seats for them as well. So there has been, as I say, from both individuals that fall under RTE, as well as the Faculty Senate, the deans and the colleges, it has been seen as a positive. It has been seen as a way of moving forward with higher education and allowing those core values that we were just trying to iron out be given to these individuals in a much more clear and consistent manner. Sorry, Bruce, I've been asking.
Kurt. I had two questions, now three, after Laura's spoken. The first is, which I think is kind of covered by the Graduate Student Assembly, but a lot of grad students are working as TAs.
Yeah, we are not addressing TAs.
Yeah, but they're professorial employees. I mean, they're academic
yep.
employees.
So those are still going to trigger. So again, with the mindset that the core set position, their main role, their core position at Cornell is as a student. So that is what we were triggering.
The second issue is the postdocs. In my experience, all of the postdocs generally find themselves doing professorial work. They're counseling younger students and they're teaching,
mm-hmm.
you know, students, or they're helping students, usually masters or PhDs, with their research. So, you know, I think it makes sense for them to be in this category and not under the employee side. And the third is, since Laura brought it up, would that mean that you would subdivide the library staff from librarians and workers in the library? So the workers of the EA, librarians would be in the
right. So
RTE?
There already is a separate
librarians are academic employees already.
That's exactly right.
Staff who are banded staff mm-hmm. are not.
Yeah, so there is already, we're not going to go in and change the structure that the libraries and archivists, let's not forget the archivists, and archivists have. What we are doing is those equivalent tenure track librarian, tenure track archivist, bringing them under the wider scope and umbrella of the academic faculty area. So we're not touching the hourly, we're not touching the regular staff employee at libraries and or museums that both of those individuals would be working at. Did I miss another hand? Tara?
I just want to clarify something. So as far as policy, like there's a clause, important clause, most policies, this, like, I'm just gonna read it. This policy is not intended to cover academic and bargaining unit stuff. So these guys are gonna be academic, right?
Yeah.
Currently they are,
but it is not clean cut. There's too much gray and yeah.
Because so they don't follow necessarily the policies from a policy standpoint, the one that we think about.
That's correct.
So I can't represent them in this case.
That's exactly right.
Right. So they're going to have their own policies that they need to flush out.
And they,
so it's not like I'm missing out on an opportunity to voice their concerns. Yeah.
We will. They will no longer be able to. See, right now, they could take up some of our seats at the EA. Uh-huh. They could take up our board of trustees spot. They could be speaking for the 7,000 that we're leaving as employee assemblies, which I think that is our main focus as an employee assembly, should be those 7,000 banded employees that need the support of this assembly. I want to take those 1,060 out of our plate, unable to sit for our spots, and let us focus on our 7,000 plus. I want the Faculty Senate and the University of Cornell to take full responsibility of those 1,060 individuals and give them a voice. Right. And that's what I'm asking for. Matt.
As I said before, I think this is fantastic. I mean, personally, I've been taught this for many years. I think this is great. I just, going back to the postdocs, I can tell you, I would encourage you strongly to talk to the Graduate Professional Student Assembly, because as I said, our leadership in our assembly was under the impression that postdocs might be coming towards us, because for instance, postdoctoral fellows are not employees.
Yeah,
and they're kind of in limbo. And again, even though they are employees, they're even if you're a postdoc and you're an employee, you still work very close to the faculty.
Yep.
So it's closer. Again, I think they tend to fall in between the being a grad student who's ready to graduate, about ready to get their PhD, versus an employee. So, and for them, their point of view, even though right now they're not really represented by the EA, in theory they could be eligible for voting seats.
Yep.
Moving them to only a, since moving to a singular non-voting seat. Again, I think that's something that I haven't been involved in this committee, but that might raise some eyebrows in terms of their, in essence, being completely disenfranchised.
Yeah.
They have no votes anywhere. And even though it's only a couple of years, I mean, it sounds like a master's program. A master's program, like, is 2 to 3 years or 1 to 2 years. You're here.
Mm-hmm.
You still get representation.
Yeah.
So I would just say, I agree with everything. I would strongly encourage you to consider talking to the GPSA about the postdocs, because I think putting them to the point where they could say they have no voice now is somewhere that might raise some eyebrows.
So we did have that engagement with the postdocs. We also had engagement with the GPSA to like unofficial levels.
Yes.
And nothing concrete for the GPSA communication had been done until we can get the buy-in from the EA to release them, the confirmation from the Faculty Senate that they were going to move forward as well. The GPSA assimilation of this group was pretty much taken off the table when this was starting to be looked at.
Okay. Well, I can just say that maybe informing them, because again, the leadership was,
I
just told them about this, and the leadership was taken a little surprise.
Okay.
Again,
just
to make sure that they're not sitting going, well, they got passed.
That's fine. And I can bring that. We're having a meeting this Friday, so,
so.
I'll bring that forward. But as far as for the actual,
So I'm just curious about what the original rationale was for including them with the EA. And if this changes our definition of who the EA is, and can we define the EA as representing banded employees rather than just simply employees who aren't, I don't know, academics or professorial.
Mm-hmm.
And does that change sort of the definition of who we represent here?
I think it will be able to really hone in for us as an EA as to who we're representing, whether we tweak our bylaws later on, whether we update things as this gets ironed through, to clearly define things a bit more. The historical aspect, I mean, I would assume Pam might even be able to give some more information, is the fact of the very closed higher education tenure track system, whereby that was that club, we are only tenure track, as well as, you know, because they didn't fit 100% into that box, then they were easily just dumped in as a automatic into the EA, as a default, okay. All right, so this will be up, this is up and has been brought up as business of the day. It is in the box for the meeting of January 16th, then I will call to vote. I encourage you, if you do have any more questions or thoughts on the exact wording of the resolution, let me know and or reach out. Sorry, yes.
I just would recommend changing the where postdocs to postdoctoral associates, like everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I think postdocs is pretty informal.
Yep.
Anybody have any other new business they want to present before we adjourn?
I have one thing to say. UA report in, I might have outdated information, but they still needed a CJC employee representative as well as a CWC.
So the CJC seat, we have communicated with the chair. We have someone identified, so that should be taken care of.
Okay. So there is also one, the Campus Welfare Committee on the University Assembly needed a seat because somebody went somewhere.
Oh, I didn't know about that one. Yeah. Okay.
And they're also looking at the code of conduct, like hardcore.
On the they would like another.
Oh, they want another one. Okay. All right. So I'll then reach out to him.
There's only one employee on the committee.
Okay.
If there's nothing else, I'd like to adjourn. Motion to
second.
Adjourn. Second. If there's no consent,
please feel.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.